Ron Reagan Jr. is following in his father's footsteps, not taking the political path his father eventually took, but instead heading in the direction of the president's first career, show business. Ron Reagan Jr. is starring in a new Cinemax comedy special. It's called Ron Reagan is the President's Son. Reagan plays himself as a TV journalist on a morning talk show. He's having problems with his co-workers, who insist on calling him the President's Son instead of Ron. In the opening scene, he goes in to discuss this with the show's producer, accompanied by his ever-present crew of Secret Service men.
That's it. I'm sick of it. Happened again, Diane. They won't call me by my real name. They're making fun of me.
Well, you are who you are. And, well, frankly, everyone is still a little steamed about that weekly strip search thing.
Standard operating procedure, ma'am. If you don't like it, hire a journalist.
Come on, guys. I am a journalist.
You do a fine job, Ron. And I'm sure you'd still have this job even if your father was only Senate Majority Leader.
How did you get the HBO special? How did the idea come up?
Well, HBO just called me up and said they wanted to offer me this Cinemax comedy experiment. And I said, sure, why not? Sounds fun. And worked on a script for a while, and it really wasn't going anywhere. Nobody was happy with it. And then Penn Jillette of Penn & Teller called up, and he said, listen, Ron, I've got an idea. You may not like it, but here it is. He said, I know you don't like to do things that sort of explicitly make mention of your connection to your parents and all that sort of thing, but what if we go way over the top with it? What if we really take it all the way and have a lot of fun with it? I said, yeah, great, no problem. So he and Eddie Gorodetsky wrote a script, and it was terrific, and we did it.
Did the writers of the HBO special interview you about what seemed most absurd to you about being a president's son?
Well, I'd known Penn and Teller, and actually had known Eddie Gorodetsky for a little while too, so they were sort of aware of what was bizarre about being the president's son. So there wasn't much rewriting or anything. They went off, did a script, came back, we read it. It was great, and there were only minor changes made.
Well, I thought I could mention some of the absurd aspects of it from the program and see what it's like in real life. In the special, you get the idea that, you know, if you as the president's son are modest, then people assume that it's just false modesty. But if you're comfortable with power, then it's assumed that you can sick the government on them if you want to.
Yeah, that's true. I guess a lot of people probably do assume that I could, like, have them audited as Ron, the character Ron does in the special.
Has it actually come up, though, where people have really thought that you are going to do something to them like that in an act of revenge?
I don't know if people have been afraid of that, possibly. You know, I of course, that's not really reality. I've probably not called in more than a half a dozen airstrikes in the time that my father's been president.
Then there's also the Secret Service question, which in the program, the Secret Service is always interfering with your personal life.
Interfering with your personal life and giving you no respect whatsoever. That was my favorite part in the special, is that the Secret Service men really can't stand Ron, and they don't have any respect for him whatsoever.
Is that how you feel now?
Well, no. I mean, you know, of course everything was exaggerated there, and most of the Secret Service people are pretty nice guys. But it is a little strange being followed everywhere you go. I was glad that I was married when my father became president, because dating with Secret Service must be really hell.
There's some terrific journalism jokes in the special. And I have to tell you that when you became a guest anchor at Good Morning America for a few days, you remember that?
Yeah. Labor Day, actually. It was only
one day
that I hosted it. They wised up after that.
Well, I'll tell you the truth. I was kind of really outraged, thinking, gosh, whatever happened to the notion of conflict of interest? Because I know that it's an entertainment show, but it's also, you know, a political magazine. What went through your mind when you decided to accept that offer?
Actually, the first thing that went through my mind is that I was going to have to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, which didn't thrill me at all. There is a certain conflict of interest, or there could be anyway. I don't think there was on that particular show. And I'm not really comfortable calling myself a journalist. That's not the way I think of myself, and it's not the way I think of what I do, even on Good Morning America. I mean, I'm sort of an entertainer of some kind or another, and that's the sort of pieces I usually do.
Well, you interview a lot of celebrities now on television.
Yeah, you do that, and you know, sort of color pieces that you do, and you try and have fun with them. You try and make it fun for the audience, you know, whether it's diving out of an airplane or, you know, whatever you happen to be doing.
Well, you've certainly been interviewed a lot in your life. Have you learned the things that you do or don't want to do as an interviewer? Have you learned a lot of lessons from being the subject of a lot of articles and portraits?
Yeah, I suppose so. I'm rather uncomfortable going after people's personal lives, especially when they're just, you know, if it's an actor or something like that, it's really none of anybody's business. I don't feel it's anybody's business what I do in my personal life, and I get uncomfortable if I have an editor or a producer who's pushing me to do that with somebody else. It's one thing if you've got a presidential candidate sitting in front of you and you want to know a little bit more about their character. There's that big word for this season. But with somebody who's in the entertainment field, who cares, really?
Are there questions that you swore you would never ask anybody?
Questions, yeah. What if you were a tree, something like that?
That's right.
Which one it would be? Yeah, I guess so.
You must
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, or, you know, who did you sleep with last night? That's another no-no.
You must get a lot of wacky offers now from people who want to use you on commercials or in programs.
Yeah, somebody not too long ago, the people who are in charge of Morris the cat, whatever cat food that he represents, they wanted me to endorse him as a presidential candidate, fly to Washington, big press conference, all that sort of thing. Didn't think that would be such a good idea.
So is this HBO special a new turn in direction for you, or do you want to be doing more acting now?
I'd like to give it a try. I mean, I don't know if I'll really be very good at it. I think I could be, but you never really know how you're going to be received by an audience or by the people who are in charge of putting those things together. But I give it a shot, see what it's like. I like the process. I enjoy the process. It takes a little pressure off you when you don't have to be yourself anymore.
Did your father give you any advice on acting?
Well, his is sort of the old school of acting about, you know, learn the lines, don't bump into the furniture. So that's about the only advice I've gotten so far.
Ron Reagan is my guest, and he has a Cinemax comedy experiment that debuts on cable TV on January 15th. You know, I think when people are teenagers, especially people of a younger generation, when they're teenagers, they frequently want to rebel against their parents, have a really different kind of lifestyle than their parents did. And when you came of age, your father was a well-known political figure. He was governor and then, of course, president.
Yeah.
Did you have fantasies of the bohemian life when you were coming of age?
Well, when I was coming of age, bohemian is probably isn't the right word for it. I lived a sort of a counterculture kind of life, I suppose, as much as any, you know, 17-year-old or whatever could. Was thrown out of high school and, you know, did my share of substance abusing and that sort of thing, as most people did then. And, I wasn't real popular with, like, school administrations and stuff.
What did you get thrown out of high school for?
What did I get thrown out of high school for? As I recall, it was sort of a technicality. It was something about, like, I was at a boarding school, and I sort of didn't sign out properly to leave the campus. But what it really came down to was they just wanted to get rid of me. I was too much trouble.
What kinds of things did you do that caused the trouble?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, it was the sort of things that everybody was doing in those days. I mean, it was kind of early 70s still, I guess. They just sort of knew I was into things that weren't real popular with school administrators and teachers and stuff, but they could never catch me, which really infuriated me. We really infuriated them. So they just got me on a technicality. There I went.
So when you dropped out of high school, when you got thrown out of that high school, did you go to another high school afterwards?
Yeah. It was like halfway through my junior year in high school, and they gave me the boot.
So you went to another one.
He went to another one, finished high school, yeah, and actually did a semester of college, too.
And then you dropped out of college.
Then I left college and started dancing, yeah.
Did you drop out because you wanted to dance?
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. I was never really crazy about school, anyway. I have nothing against higher education. I think it's a wonderful thing, but it just didn't seem to be for me at the time, anyway.
You were 18 when you started to dance. What what interested you then in the art?
I was fascinated by the way dancers moved, the plasticity and the, you know, the elevation of a Baryshnikov and things like that. And I had been actually since I was young, but when you're a kid growing up in America, you sort of think of ballet dancers as people that are hatched out of pods somewhere on the, you know, the Siberian tundra. So it never occurred to me that you could actually become one of these people until I was older.
And what made you think that you could become one?
Well, I didn't know I could become one. I was well aware of the fact that I was starting almost ridiculously late. But I thought I'd give it a try anyway. I wasn't having such a good time at college, so why not try this? And I was lucky. It worked out. My feet pointed and, you know, all the right things. So, you know, I was one of, you know, the fortunate few who can start late and still pull it off.
You know, I think it is the nightmare of all parents of the middle and upper middle and upper class that their son or daughter will drop out of college. And, you know, drop out of college, and then you hear it's going to kill your parents if you do that. Did you hear that from your parents when you decided to drop out of Yale?
No, because my siblings, it sort of paved the way for me. I don't think one of us has graduated from college, if I recall correctly. I don't think a single one of my brothers and sisters graduated college.
Were you concerned about how it would look for your father's political career if you didn't finish at Yale?
No. That's the thought that rarely crosses my mind.
So when you decided,
I don't think that he worries about, you know, how I'm going to have to explain him to my friends when he makes certain decisions. So, I don't worry too much about his political career. He's done pretty well for himself.
Well, it's funny you should say that about how you were going to explain his decisions to your friends, because you were dancing with the Joffrey Ballet during a period when he was making cutbacks to the arts.
That's right. And I went on unemployment, as a matter of fact. The whole company went on unemployment for a period of a few weeks, as the Joffrey regularly does, or did anyway in my day. And that made the headlines in New York. That was a big thing for the New York Post and that ilk.
Well, if I were you, I would have been a little self-conscious about getting on the unemployment line.
Well, hell, I paid unemployment insurance. I was a worker just like everybody else, so I figured I wasn't going to take money from my parents. That was sort of the implication of all the reporters who showed up on my doorstep one day, was that, well, why are you collecting unemployment? Why don't you just get money from your parents? I wanted to say, well, you know, some of the other dancers have wealthy parents, too. I suppose you could ask the same question of them, but you're not.
So you didn't feel at all uncomfortable about that?
No, not really.
Were the Secret Service people standing in line with you on the unemployment line?
As I recall, they waited outside.
I guess
they were probably embarrassed.
One of those moments when it's uncomfortable, I suppose.
Yeah.
Let's get back to this thing about you having to explain your father's policies to your friends. When there were all these arts cutbacks and you were dancing in the ballet and then the whole company ends up going on unemployment, were you expected to explain your father's policies? Do your friends expect you to answer for him or to defend him or agree with him?
Well, fortunately, in the ballet world, most of my friends in the company probably weren't even aware of the cutbacks to the arts. They're a pretty apolitical bunch. Ballet being a rather claustrophobic and you know, sheltered environment. So, no, I didn't have to explain myself or my father to any of them.
Do you consider yourself apolitical?
Well, I don't know. What do you mean by apolitical?
Well, you just used the word before, but someone who's not very politically active, doesn't take a strong stand on politics, and politics isn't a primary part of their world.
Well, politics isn't a primary part of my world, and I have no intention of doing anything in politics, God knows. But that doesn't mean I don't have an opinion on a lot of things, sure.
Okay.
So I don't know where that makes me. Am I apolitical or not? I'm sort of semi-political, I guess.
Okay. You danced with the Joffrey for two seasons?
I was with Joffrey, too, for a couple of years, and then I did a New York season, roughly a year with a big company, yeah.
Did you feel like you were in a fishbowl then, in a way that, or did the company feel self-conscious that they were getting a different kind of attention than they used to because of your presence in it? I don't know if that was an issue or not.
It was at times. The company probably valued the attention that they got. I never really talked to them about that too much. I felt a little uncomfortable with it because here I was a starting dancer. And I remember the first time I ever got on stage with Joffrey too, with the second company, which is sort of a small training or touring company that they have. And it was in Brooklyn at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, I think. And Clive Barnes was in the audience to review me. And that was a little strange. I mean, that's not the usual thing for Clive Barnes to come and kind of, you know, do a review of a beginning second company dancer. So I thought that that was a little strange and probably unfair.
Well, after getting started in dance as late as you did and having a really successful career early on, you left dance after a couple of seasons. Why did you want to give it up?
It didn't have anything to do with dance. I love dancing. I love performing. And I like the work. But working for a ballet company is not really quite what I expected it to be. Maybe I should have known better. But you figure that after a number of years training and becoming a professional dancer in a major company, that you and your friends, your colleagues, are entitled to a certain amount of respect, at least honesty, on the part of the company. And that wasn't always the case, and that began to bother me. And I also realized that if I had any other interests outside of dance, I wouldn't be able to explore them because dance takes up so much of your time, like all of your time.
Right.
Yeah. So that's really why I left. I asked myself if I wanted to be doing that 10 years from that point, and the answer was no.
Well, I want to talk with you more about your life, but first we're going to take a short break. My guest is Ron Reagan Jr., and the occasion for our interview is an upcoming Cinemax comedy experiment that he stars in. It's called Ron Reagan is the President's Son, and it debuts on January 15th. We'll talk more after this short break. This is Fresh Air. Ron Reagan is my guest. Your career as an actor, I think, got started when you guest...
A short career.
Yes, it got started when you guest hosted Saturday Night Live.
Yeah, and, yeah. Well, I guess so. You could say that, yeah.
And all of us in America witnessed you in that risky business, that now famous risky business parody in which you danced in your underwhere.
Uh-huh. Who's, actually, it wasn't my underwear.
Yeah.
Let's clear that up.
Was it stunt underwear?
Stunt underwear, yes. I had a dance belt on underneath, actually.
Whose idea was the sketch?
I think it was Al Franken's, as I recall. Al Franken and Tom Davis were there at the time, and they came up with the idea, and it was such a good idea. I mean, it was obvious that it was a good idea, that there was no discussion about it. It was just great. Let's do it.
You didn't go through the whole will I be self-conscious appearing in underwear?
No, I danced in things, you know, that were as brief or briefer than that before in front of large audiences, so I, you know, no.
And and I've read in newspapers that you didn't call your parents first and get their reaction.
No, I guess I didn't. I don't remember when I called them or, you know, when exactly they saw it, but...
What was their reaction?
I'm sorry. What was their reaction? They were fine about it. The risky business thing had to be explained to them because they hadn't seen the movie,
right.
So they weren't really sure why I was in my underwear in a mock-up of the Oval Office. But when it was explained to them, they appreciated the humor involved.
You know, it's interesting to me. Your father has expressed a very idealized view of the nuclear family, and he was supported by the moral majority. And in a lot of ways, you really don't seem to fit into his picture of the nuclear family. What I mean by that is, you know, on TV, you dance in your underwear. You did a series of photographs in these hot red briefs for Vanity Fair.
Yeah.
You were living with your girlfriend before you got married.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, it doesn't fit with this perfect family type of picture. And I wonder what you make of that when you hear your father painting a portrait of the family that's different from where you are.
Well, that's of course his idealized version of the family, not mine, and I've never, you know, sort of tried to pattern my life after stump speeches that my father or anybody else makes. Yeah, I mean, our own family is not exactly the ideal, you know, it's not sort of the Cleavers or whatever, you know, our father knows best or anything like that. It's different, you know, it's the real world, and in the real world there aren't a lot of nuclear families that come right out of 50s sitcoms.
Do you ever feel that your father's not acknowledging the real world of your family?
How do you mean, my wife and I? Or?
No, well, of you and your sister Patty and the fact that he was once divorced himself.
No, I think he, you know, he does have a somewhat idealized version, perhaps, of the world. And that might be just a generational thing. I mean, you have to remember that he was born before the First World War and grew up in sort of small-town America and things like that. And so maybe he does have a very different picture of how the world is or should be anyway. And, of course, we're, you know, from a very different generation, and we see things quite differently.
Now, a lot of people from your generation, I should say our generation, because I think we're fairly close.
I'm 29. How old are you?
Well, I'm older than you are. I'm 36, so let's see.
Well, sort of in the country. My wife is 36, so...
So we're loosely same generation. But anyways, I think a lot of young people faced with their adults with a lot of young people faced with their parents.
Yeah.
These terrible splits when the sons and daughters started either trying marijuana or having premarital sex, living with lovers, things like that, and parents just went crazy. I mean, they got really upset and thought this was it, all their good upbringing for nothing.
Yeah, that's always been the way, though. I mean, whatever the generation was, if, you know, suddenly their kids were wearing zoot suits or whatever, and they got very upset, or listening to that awful Frank Sinatra instead of, what, Rudy Valley or something? I don't know. Well, so there's always been generational clashes like that.
But what, if anything, did your parents do to try to bring you back into the fold?
My mother still actually would prefer that I dressed a different way, I think. And she occasionally will try and tell my wife to go into my closet and throw out certain items of clothing that she doesn't particularly care for. But that's about as far as she goes.
One of the subjects that I imagine you might have some disagreements with your family now on is the subject of AIDS. I know you've been, various educational work on behalf of AIDS education.
I did a film.
You did a film that was on public television. You've done some condom ads too, right? Well, not ads, announcements.
Public service announcements, yeah.
Yeah, recommending that people use condoms.
Right.
And find out about condoms. Have you tried to discuss the subject of AIDS with your father? People who are people from the health community and the gay community and people who are working around the subject of AIDS have been very critical of your father's policies and his lack of federal funding for AIDS programs.
That.
Yeah, so what was that like?
Well, as I said, I argue with them all the time about that sort of thing. It's not that, you know, my parents or my father specifically is unconcerned about AIDS. That wouldn't be fair. But it is fair that it's not a sort of priority item for the administration as a whole. You have to remember that the president doesn't always set the complete agenda. I mean, he's got a lot of people around him that are sort of telling him what ought to be at the top of the list and that sort of thing. I'm not trying to take away any responsibility that he has, but it's just sort of a fact. I was upset that the sort of William Bennett faction seemed to be winning out over the C. Everett Koop, faction, if you will, in the White House. I think it's an irresponsible point of view that Bennett has. I think it's an unrealistic one. And I say so. I tell my parents that, and I would tell anybody that. It's what I believe.
It sounds like you have the kind of relationship with your parents where you can disagree on issues and still be very close.
Yeah, we do all the time. I argue with them all the time. I've almost appointed myself as kind of the family heckler. I'm always fighting with them about some issue or another.
Do people who see you on TV or read you in magazines ever get a little frustrated in a way that you're talented and funny and things like that? And here's what I mean. I think I'm not making myself clear.
So far,
just
it sounds
yet.
Very nice.
There's a lot of people who are very upset with your father because of his policies, and here you are, his son, mm-hmm. not agreeing with his policies, and also, starring on Saturday Night Live, dancing in your underwear, things like that, while your father really passes judgment on life or death issues. Mm-hmm. And in a way, your presence in the entertainment world can make it seem like, well, heck, but we're all really nice, lovable, fun-loving guys. It's all just a game.
You mean fun-loving? We meaning the family, or
yeah,
or we meaning,
yeah, yeah.
We are sort of fun-loving people, I suppose. But that's really not fair. I mean, should I sort of wear sackcloth and ashes and stuff in protest of various things that I disagree with? With my father. This is what I'm able to do. We all have to earn a living, and this is how I earn mine. And I don't really think I have to justify that to somebody who thinks that I should be, you know, crusading for, I don't know, an atomic free world or something.
I hope you don't mind my asking this, but
no, not at all.
If Ronald Reagan wasn't your father, do you think you'd vote for him for president? Do you think you would have voted for him?
Well, he can't run
again. Well, right. This is the past tense. Do you think you would have voted for him for president?
Given the choice, yeah, I probably would have. I we do disagree, and I think a lot of people who voted for him did disagree, and the reason they voted for him was that he projected a certain strength and a certain sincerity, which is true. I think that's valid, and I think I probably, I either would have voted for him or not at all. I don't think I would have voted for the alternatives.
Are you a Republican? Yourself?
No, I'm on the form that I filled out. There's a little space that says declined to state, and that's the one I checked.
So, what's next in your acting career?
Well, I don't know. We'll have to see how this Cinemax comedy experiment goes, and hopefully there'll be some more offers. I've had some offers, some good, some bad, you know, some that just didn't pan out for various reasons. But I'd like to give it a try anyway and just see if I'm any good at it. And if so, I mean, you can have a lot worse life than being some sort of movie star or something.
Did you ever regret that your father entered politics and gave up show business and entertainment? Because you're really so much more tuned into the entertainment world and the political world yourself.
No, I never really thought about that. I mean, that's his life. Everybody's got to do what they want to do with their own lives.
Your life was directly affected. You had to live in the governor's mansion instead of in the heart of the filmmaking industry.
Yeah, they were never very much a Hollywood family, or we were never much of a Hollywood family. It wasn't like a lot of movie stars were running in and out of our house. So I never felt like I was really that much of a part of that world.
Okay. Well, listen, I want to thank you very much for spending some of your time with us.
Well, thank you.
My guest has been Ron Reagan, and he stars in a Cinemax comedy experiment that will debut on January 15th. And as you probably know, he can also be seen as a special correspondent on Good Morning America and is a contributing editor at Playboy magazine. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.